Welcome to Star from the Universe On Call. I am Paul France, owner of France Games. I run SFB Online, FedCom Online, and Starfleet Warlord. Just when a minor had to join us, we have a talk guest every Thursday night starting at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time. You can either call us on the phone, just dial 724-444-7444. Just follow the directions, and the call ID is 17702. Or you can participate on the web. Just go to the Talkshoe website at www.talkshoe.com and search for call ID 17702. And if you need to contact me for any reason, my email address is sfuoncall@gmail.com. That's sfuoncall at gmail.com. Also, if you need to reach me via Skype, my Skype ID is FransGames, FransGames. And of course, you can follow me on the Twitters. My account there is Paul Franz. So to find me on Twitter, just go to twitter.com/PaulFranz. That's PaulFranz. And then, of course, I have a secret account called Franz Games where I announce this podcast, news, the various news, and also the client updates. Some quick news from ADB. Of course, this week, for the most part, Steve Cole was working from home. You know, healing from the surgery that he had. He's doing well at the moment, which is always good to hear. But, you know, he still has the drain tube in and all that. But also, he's been creating a text for the ships that are going on the Shapeways, which actually happened yesterday and today. Moving on to Mr. Patrick. He, of course, is busy working on Cabal's Log number 53. And, of course, the Zinni and Gorn Master Starship books. He continues to do work on that. Gene was busy with, guess what? Uploading ships to Shapeways! Yay! Actually, I'm sorry. I'm being insincere. I mean, yay, it's awesome to have more minis up on Shapeways, because the better the collection we have at Shapeways, the more people can buy, so if people can hopefully at some point create a full collection of ships that is their fleet, which I think would be really awesome. Of course, also, she's been beating off the spam assault that's been happening on the BBS. And currently, there's also 52 new miniatures that are up on Shapeways. That includes, actually, it's like over 80. But I trimmed them all down to how many different ones, not how many different scales. Because some of them a lot more duplicate because of the scaling. You know, they're both scales listed. Moving onward to the SFB Online tournaments, of course, we have Rat number 47 run by Bill Schiller. There's Paul and Ted are supposed to play tonight. I've not seen any progress on that one. That doesn't mean much, because the last time I checked was like an hour ago. It's possible they're playing now, and I wouldn't know, because I had to get started on this. But yeah, Paul's been sick lately, so that's why they've been pushing it off. Paul is going to be trying to play even though he's sick, because I know they really need to get that game done. Moving on to the World League tournament run by Peter Bakia. Team BCS defeated King's Ransom and Team Orion Oldies in Bikinis defeated the Fistful of Drones. Unfortunately, that's my team. When it comes to Platinum Head Tournament, we've got all the people submitted to see Patrick. I've yet to see a posting of the actual tree. Hopefully, we will see that in the upcoming week. I will email Mr. Patrick. A little bit later, and just to remind him that, hey, we're waiting for the tree so we can post it up. When it comes to library, sorry, no progress. We're still stuck at 2,365 completed conversions and a 70.6 completed rate. And given today is November 2nd, which is All Souls Day, this remembrance of Joe Butler, who is a great SB judge and an all-around great guy. He passed away many, many years ago, but we still remember him on this day. And also Scott Hahn, and who passed away also many years ago, who played Starfleet Warlord and is always remembered. And This past year, we have the passing of Arthur DeLauro Sr. He was a fantastic Starfleet Warlord player, and I always enjoyed talking to him on many an evening about either my screw-ups or just about Starfleet Warlord altogether. He was a great father and friend to many Starfleet Warlords players. And with that, that is the news for this week. And it's me, it's the one, the only, the Paul Friend, welcoming you to Starfleet Universe On Call. And with me, it is, well, you got me. And also, you have the chat room. We got Dave and AW, and I was hoping Russ would show up, but Russ probably is busy doing something else, which is perfectly fine. Because actually, one of the topics we're actually going to talk about, one of those monsters, that I wanted him to be here, but if he can't be here, that's fine. I'll still talk about it just because if you're not here, I'm hoping that you at the very least took the opportunity to download and listen to the Halloween special that Russ and I recorded. Actually, Russ recorded and I had comments too, which was about a lot of his work, what he's been doing with ADB. Well, attempting to do with ADB. I understand that, you know, it's difficult, and I agree with that. You know, as I mentioned in the podcast, that, you know, ADB has certain quality standards, and also, of course, they have a certain schedule. And it's not just quality, it's also consistency, because it has to be consistent with the rules as are known, and also the different empires and how people react. You know, they want it to be high quality stuff. And I totally understand that, but I also know it's frustrating when you're trying to get ADB to, you know, try to engage with him and try to get you know, right quality fiction. One of the things that you really need is, of course, ADB to respond. And sometimes they're like me, where I have a hard time sometimes communicating, because, come on, one of the most difficult things in the entire world with any kind of team, period, local, you know, same office, or virtual, is always been communication, keeping good, constant communication. I've noticed this for many years, and Lord knows I've discussed this with many people at my day job. But in any case, we're going to move forward on when it comes to, I'm going to do a quick talk about Russ's monsters. Well, the main monster, of course, if you listen to the Halloween special, is his eels, which actually I think is a wonderful idea. You know, the whole idea of smaller eels and have the different fries of eels. And then, of course, you have the swarms of the fries. And also, I think was the more imaginative. Well, it's pretty imaginative, but I think really good idea. Let's put it that way. Is the idea of basically advanced MCIDs. The whole idea of, because the current MCIDs is just lackluster. It needs some improvement because of its too easy to defeat, you know. And I like the idea of the different monsters having different MCIDs. I agree with that. I think that would be a great, and as I mentioned in the podcast, and I'm just going to re-mention here, which is the whole idea of having more of a menu. You know, each monster has different kinds of MCIDs, different kind of attacks, different kind of things it can do to defend itself. And then as part of that monster, you say, well, this has MCID's ability A, B, and F. You know, because, or in the case of the eels, you know, it's depending upon which eel you're talking about. I like the idea of actually of the different ability for different eels. But obviously there's also the difficulty of that in general. As I mentioned on the previous podcast, which was basically that you really, really would be a good idea. You know, having a single kind of MCIDs, a certain attack, I think it really simplifies the monsters. But also, it makes it easier to rate the monsters, because as I mentioned again, that, you know, I think you can, one thing that you, that I think that that you have to do is have an ability to scale up. That is, okay, you've got an approximate 250 point quote unquote fleet, because Lord knows 250 points is more of a squadron, if not just a pair of ships. 250 can actually, you can have like three destroyers, so you can have a squadron of destroyers if you want. But you want a swarm that's going to be competitive with that. So, so with that, you know, the thing with the rating, the idea is you can then scale up or scale down. You know, you can, a person can have a harder monster to fight, or an easier monster to fight. That depends upon how good the player is, and overall, what kind of challenge he wants. If he just wants something just to play around with the rules and learn them, and then maybe learn how to defeat the monsters, and then later on maybe, you know, actually crank it up and go, okay, let's go for it, and actually want to that evening, because obviously, Russ, I know that you like to have, yes, we are talking about monsters. Solo monsters are always the, well, monsters are, when it comes to solo monsters, not player-controlled monsters, I think they're nice to have, basically, because for those times when you don't have time, you can't get together with someone, but you still want to play Starfleet battles. So you fight against the monster, which is awesome. And obviously, having an automated monster would be, or automated monsters would be great to have in SFB Online, because there's more than one time when I know there are some people who would like to play against an automated opponent, and actually playing against a monster is a heck of a lot easier, because offense and defense and how the monster reacts is invariably pre-coded. Meaning the rules are already set, and the rules for how the monsters are going to react, what kind of defense they have, what kind of attacks they have, those are pretty much defined, especially if there's for a solo scenario. You know, which I think would be great, you know, to have monsters part of SCP Online for that fact. You know, at the very least, it would help people to learn the interface maybe a little better. But overall, I think help them to just maybe just have something to play against, you know, I think would be fantastic. Yeah, true. It was just mentioning the 250 points of hydrants in year 180 might get a couple heavy destroyer, war destroyers, sorry, and its fighters, which, of course, people have to remember that when they play the hydrants, the fighters aren't included in the BPV. You got to remember that, because otherwise, what invariably happens is that you have a really cheap carrier that can just kick butt, instead of actually having a valid BPV. So, you know, it's like people who play the Zinni and Y-180 go, oh, they're all fast drones, it's included in the BPV. No, they're not. People, no, they're not. Okay. Russ is mentioning that he just got home. It wasn't expecting to be on tonight, but customers delayed for a couple hours. And he says, too, the color was to do tonight after working all day long. So obviously Russ is quite busy. He might be hanging out just for a little bit. And thank you, Russ, for at least stopping in. I think Russ's ideas for some of the monsters are great. I like the idea of having a compendium of monsters. You know, some of the original monsters and some new monsters. And possibly, and obviously some scenarios, because obviously you have to have rules for those monsters and how they react and so forth. And usually those are defined in scenario rules, is how they're defined. But I think if we could actually have a compendium where for each monster you have, here's the special rules for it, and it uses MCIDs. I know. Oh, I agree, AW. AW's mentioned that Y1A drone cost is a cold bucket of water for a Zinni player. Yeah. When you realize, this 120-point ship is actually like 150? Oh, yeah. That's a lot of drones. And each one of those drones costs 1 point if you want fast drones. Now, you can they can be all fast drones because of general availability. Actually, that's Y184 or Y180? I forget when fast drones are generally available. But in either case, whenever that is, you know, where you can have it generally available, that would be, you can do it. It's just going to cost you a lot. Okay. Russ has another, thinking about the congers some more. That's the conger's eels for those. Not remembering that, of course, me. I forgot what the name of the eels that Russ had developed, and I apologize, Russ, for not remembering that. Russ, AW, 179? I could have sworn it was 180 at the very least. Maybe I'm wrong, Wow. By impulse, what? You didn't say which impulse. Russ was saying that he play tested some attack plan to try on the Congress, and play tested that night, which was Tuesday night. That plan was totally wrecked by impulse 12 of the first turn. Oh, that he was thrilled. I'm assuming this was an attack. Oh, to try on the Congress. Okay, it says a way to defeat the Congress. Okay. Oh, I think that would, given that you want to have each of the eel to have different attacks available to them, you have to roll to see what kind of attacks they have available. I would think that would define what kind of attack plan you can have against the Congress. Because of obviously that, depending upon, it's like defining what your tactics are going to be based on the weapons of the opponent that you're flying against. That's kind of, makes sense. And for those of you who like football, currently the Jets 10, Bills 7 at halftime. Obviously, if you're listening to this after the fact, I don't think you care. in your chat room, you already know. So, But that's part of being on this podcast during the fall. So, that's just part of what we do here. Yes, we actually keep an eye on the football score for Thursday nights. And of course, it's only started occurring after the NFL decided to actually start playing football games on Thursday nights. Wow. Interesting. But anyway. Moving forward, so I think Russ's ideas for monsters are really great. I can't wait to see some of them. And Russ, I will email you to remind you to send me, I'm not sure if you want to do the Congers or you want to do a different monster, something a little, something that can only be done using a client, or at least more easily done with a client. So if you have a monster like that, because of obviously, you know, I think that'd be great, basically. I'm actually going to look at some of the rules for some of the monsters. Does anyone know if there's a consolidated list of the scenarios which contain monsters? Because if you do, that would be fantastic. Because I could take that and actually go look up the scenarios. How Pogo? Okay. Cool. Okay, great. Great, Russ. That'd be fantastic. If you could email me about the Pogo. Which will be quite interesting to see how this all works out. I think it'd be kind of cool. Really. But moving forward, actually, and when we move off of talking about monsters. Okay. It's a reminder that A.W. Cookson was saying that the stepped availability of fast drones from 178 to 180. It's stepped up. I was thinking about, you know, when they had 100% availability as well as thinking. But moving forward, the next topic for this evening, as quickly as we go through these. Okay, thanks, Russ. Russ is going to send me a list of the monster scenarios. We drone on. Yes, thank you, AW. I should launch a fast drone right towards you. Forward, jeez. Next topic for this evening, actually, I want to talk about, if for nothing else, basically monster ships. Or back in the day, and actually there were some posts on the DBS which was describing scary ships. And I just had some crazy ideas. Of course, I like Andromedans. Big surprise! Because Andros rule. And that is one of the crazy ships that I thought of, which is, I'm pretty sure this one does not exist. Which is the whole idea. To me, it's kind of a scary ship in that it's got one function. And that function is to disrupt the fleet formation. And that is, I call it the disruptor. I don't think that's actually, I'm pretty sure that that's definitely not a name of a ship, because disruptor is also a name of a weapon. But the whole idea of it is that you've got like a hull, let me think, let's say an intruder hull with additional, you know, AWRs, no cargo space. The cargo space is switched over to be filled with AWRs. The reason why we have AWRs is because of it, warp is required for disruptors. And what I was thinking of is that the intruder would then have 6 disruptors. The disruptor ship would have 6 dizzy devs, or displacement devices. So the idea is that this ship would come in and it would then use its displacement devices and it also would have transporters. The only function of the transporter would be obviously for hit and run raids, but also, I think this can be done. I'll have to double check on the rules, but I'm pretty sure you can do this, which is you can use a transporter. Actually, I think it requires 2 transporters to basically move. You can actually take one of your satellite ships and move it from one hex to another hex via transporter. If I recall correctly, I think you can do it, but it requires 2 transporters is what it requires. Because I know one thing you can do, which is kind of, it's, I have to double check on the rules for this, which I'm pretty sure you can use transporters to transport a satellite ship from one ship to another. And obviously, that's what I was thinking, but I'm pretty sure you can do the same thing for just moving a satellite ship, as long as it's obviously moving speed 10 or less. You know, it follows all the rules when it comes to the restrictions before it can actually be transported. And I think that would be a really cool ship. As I said, it would have some phasers because of the very least. It's not meant for attacking purposes. It's the phasers are designed for defense because it needs some way to defend itself other than using just T-bombs. Okay, I figured that was Russ. Russ was mentioning that his failed attack plan was thwarted by the eels. Big surprise. MG Lawson, how you doing? But that, you know, I thought that can be, to me, kind of a scary ship in that, you know, you can, especially displacement devices, which they work all the way out to 12 hexes? Yeah, 12 hexes. So if you can send one of these ships and then all it's going to do, it's going to take the ships, you know, the enemy ships, and it's going just, idea is just to break apart their fleet formation. You know, if they decide, I'm going to stack them, well, ding, 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 ding. It's going to do six displacements at one time against your fleet. So six of your ships are going to be willy-nilly, you know, assuming that they all succeed. But they can be willy. Well, that's actually the range on that is, I forgot what the range is. The range is out to like range 30, if I recall correctly. But even that, you know, range 30, it's like 1 in 6 chance. It's really abysmal. But you know, the whole idea of it being able to split apart the fleet, you can, and then what happens is that your opponent then is, the enemy fleet's going to try to regroup, try to get back to its old formation, you know. And if you can split them apart, then you can then, depending upon how the displacement goes, you can actually use that to attack individual ships, because you know, especially if you have some that are actually pushed closer to you. And if I recall correctly, even for enemy ships, there's a 1 in 6 chance you actually can force the opponent ship to go the direction that you want. I.e., let's say that it goes in direction 4. I want it to come in direction 1. I want it to come closer to me. And in the case, obviously, if you have a super stack of 6 ships and you use the whole ship's complement of the displacement devices, all 6 of these, then you can have some that you want to come closer to you, some that are going to be directly away from you. Okay, instead of going direction 4, I want to go direction 2. And this one, instead of going direction 4, I want to go direction 3. So the idea is to split up the formation and not have any of them go to the same exact spot. Mm-hmm. So, and Russ, I'm just to let you know, just one quick side note, which is if I'm not sure if you listened to the podcast itself, but one of the things that I did mention is that I would love to see a video of how you use Vizio to play test your games, at the very least to maybe give me some ideas about how to add some ways of interacting with the pieces and interacting with the board game. Yes, Dave, there's a number of limited number of DizDev ships in a fleet. Agreed, because of the displacement effect. But if you have one of the ships which has dust displacement devices, and that's all it has, then, you know, I think it'd be a great complement to, like, let's say, a Dominator. You know, you have a Dominator and this ship come in, and then you can truly disrupt a fleet. You know, and completely ravage it, especially with, you know, the Dominator's complement. You know, I think it'd be quite cool. And I think it's, I forget how many dev ships. Is it two or three? I forget which. Okay, thanks, Russ. Russ just mentioned that he will be able to send me a capture of that wonderful Vizio this week, or try to do it this weekend. And, you know, that'd be great if you could. That's one of those, I consider a scary ship. If you guys in the chat room have an idea of a scary ship that's realistic, you know, because obviously the whole idea of having a ship that has lots of shields, lots of power, and lots of heavy weapons is kind of crazy. But you have to have it to be the very least realistic to a certain degree. You know, you can't have, like, oh, let's say a B-10 with 20 disruptors. You know, things like that. You know, the B-10, as is, just by its very nature, is pretty scary just because of its size. You know, and usually, that's one thing that it was actually an interesting side note here, which is I was listening to Three Moves Ahead. Big surprise! I like the podcast. Actually, I'm finally caught up. I got behind because of, it's taken me my podcasting listening struggles occurred back in May, I think, of this year, you know, and it's only now that I'm starting to finally get caught up with all the podcasts that I want to listen to. I've been currently killing one of my podcasts, which is a 2-hour podcast, and I'm almost caught up. But moving forward, what was I thinking about? It wasn't about the scary ships, it was a side note. Crap. Yes. It was Three Moves Ahead that they're talking about Total War Warhammer. And what was it about that? Well, actually, there's two things, actually. There's one of them I wanted to talk about tonight, but that's not what I was thinking of. Crap. Oh, I know what it was. It was that the whole idea of, obviously, one thing in SFB when it comes to scenario rules, one of the things we have is the whole idea of command and control. And that would limit what kind of ships, and usually the idea is that you have to have a certain number of smaller ships, and then you need a larger ship to control the smaller ships. And then you just can't have all these large ships without having some of the smaller ships. And that's one thing they were talking about in Total War Warhammer 2, that's one thing they like to see added. And because currently you have the whole problem with basically it's like playing Starfleet Warlord, where it's kind of mob mentality. There is no such thing as structures, no such thing as command and control. And that's one thing they're saying. You know, I think they were saying that, this would be a great idea to definitely simplify things so that you have to have these lesser creatures. And then you have this, I think it was a prince, which was, I think it was considered a hero in Total War, Warhammer 2. And they were saying that, you know, because the problem is they have all these really basically super creatures that all get together and you don't have... And it would be a lot better, you know, if it required you to get some of the smaller creatures. Where did... Okay. I don't know. Either it was mentioned where in the bleep did the Brentonians go in Total War Warhammer. That he looked online and all he found was Age of Sigmar. Don't know. Oh, B-11 with launch tubes, 360 Gatlings, and full Aegis. That's an interesting idea. Definitely, the launch tubes would definitely make it much scarier, especially with the complement of fighters that it can possibly carry. What was it? A soldier battleship? Yeah, agreed. That'd be quite scary. What's the... darn it. Module C4. What's the empire that had the T-bomb throwers? I think it was in Module C4. Because then we have the shark hunters, which... interesting. Empire, in that... I remember one of the cool weapons it had was the... which I think, actually... here's one that actually can be quite scary, in my mind. Take some of the shark hunters with their plasma torpedoes. Now, here's the one thing about their plasma torpedoes. They're fly-by-wire. What that means... the whole idea of a shark hunter... is that even after you cloak, it never loses. It still can fly. It will never lose fire control. Active fire control. Lock on. On your ship. It doesn't maintain lock on, but the whole idea is that the ship actually controls the actual plasma. So it's not, the plasma is not actually controlled by normal seeking weapon rules. It's you fly it the way you want have the plasma torpedo go. Oh, I agree. AW was mentioning about the B-11 with launch tubes. They said, hang 4 casual PFs off of that and you'll never get anything within 5 hexes. Oh, shark hunters are the ones that have the bomb throwers. Russ mentioned that Gene was asking, wasn't Gene's Frawley fleet of admin shells supposed to be scary? I don't think that would scare anyone. Unless they're Captain Kirk in each one of them. I'm not sure you've heard the joke about that one. I'm sorry. Sorry. To the audio audience, that is AW was mentioned that the shark hunter is saying that the C4 really needed another SSD book. That would be great. It's compiling some of the SSDs that are in the captain's logs. I think that would be great. There's only one minor problem, which is I'm not sure how many people actually would buy it, because I'm not sure how many bought Module C4. I'm one of those people, I'm crazy enough to buy Module C4. And of course, anyone who's actually ever played the Flivver Empire, those ships, are actually in Module C4. And I forget who actually created the Flivver, meaning... what I mean by who created them, because usually we have like the barbarians, which were created by the ISC. You have the shark hunters, which were created by the Romulans. But I'm not sure who the Flivver were created by. As a simulator race or empire. Sorry. Yeah. MG, I'm sure that's... The question is, MG, would you have bought it if it wasn't on clearance? Right, okay. Dave, thank you. Dave just reminds me that the T-bomb, the bomb throwers are purely as like for the flashbulb effect. They don't do any damage whatsoever. Yeah, that's true, AW. They just mentioned that if you make the SSD, new SSD book, which is a compilation of the one SSDs that are in the cabin's log, and you make it electronic only, then, of course, all you have to pay for is Petrick's and Steve Cole's time. So, obviously, that they have to be pulled off of whatever project they're doing. And so the question is, well, all the time that they put towards that, will it be worth the money that they get back? That's still, you know, a cost involved. You know, there's no physical cost since you're not going to be printing it, but there's still a cost when it comes to, you know, Steve Cole's time is worth so many dollars per hour. Steve Petrick's time is worth so many dollars per hour. And then, of course, we have Jean. Her time is worth so many dollars per hour, and she has to proofread it. Oh, okay, the flippers were operated by the Klingons. Okay, thank you. Thank you, Dave. I hated the flippers. The reason, and I'm not sure, I'm sure I mentioned this before, that reason why I hate the flippers with all the passion in my being is that I played against them in the Andromedans, and unfortunately, actually, I think this was the flipper tournament cruiser is what I played against. And the problem is those stupid hyper drones go so fast across the board that you can't defeat them. Well, the problem was that the Andromedas had only had six phasers. So the eighth phaser, two Andromedas actually could defend themselves against the flipper. But the six phaser two version, you know, the actual version of the Andromeda, the Terminal Cruiser, is, you know, could not handle the flipper attack. You know, invariably those hyper drones would hit the PA panels and just start to wreck them after a while. Debbie, what do you mean by some sim races have had reality creep? Do you mean, you're talking about the Fracks? Is that what you're talking about? You know, how they had a reality creep, i.e. they became kind of almost a real empire, you know, with all of the ships and so forth that were created for the Fracks. Okay. Just want to make sure that we're on the same page here. Yeah, I agree there, you know. But some of the simulator races I think are really cool. And I personally would really like to fly them, because they're neat, they're different, and more to the point, I think for those ships, is that yeah, okay, they don't have any territory, so you can't really play them in an F&E kind of game, but the great thing about them is that unlike the Omegas, or more to the point. Unlike the LMC empires, they don't have special rules. You know, they're more kind of integrated because of for the most part, they use weapons, except for, you know, the special weapons like, you know, the bomb throwers, like the flipper hyper drones, which don't really exist. You know, those specialized kind of weapons. And weapons systems, but overall everything else is integrated. Like, that's the problem with the Omegas. The Omegas have their own special version of phasers, you know, all these different kinds of phasers, and the way that it's integrated, really, I've complained about this for how many years now, about how I really don't like the way the Omega rules are integrated with the regular rules, because it just looks really janky overall. I almost, as I mentioned before about that, sorry I'm going down this rabbit hole, and that is that just copy the rules from the phasers. I know that it's a copy, duplicate the rules, but here's the one thing that would really, that would lend itself to, what that lends itself to is it looks really like an integrated set of rules for these kinds of phasers. And in fact, you can actually modify, if you want to, you can modify those rules for phasers just a little bit. You know, like maybe saying you can't downgrade the phasers, though currently you can. But, you know, to have different rules, all these exceptions to the phaser rules no longer apply. Just copy the rules. You know, yes, it'll take up more space and therefore it costs more money. And also, there's always the, what I call the copy problem. Ask anyone who's done coding. And that is having multiple copies of the same descriptions. You know, and if you update one, you have to update all of those copies. So, and it's always hard. It's always an issue because ask Steve Petrick when it comes to the Crawford boxes, which is always try to keep multiple copies of the same information in sync is a difficult thing. He always mentioned that he thinks that the X2 is a simulated myth. Hey, maybe that's it. Maybe that's a different approach for X2. Which is, instead of moving forward when it comes to the actual timeline of the galaxy, you know, of Starfleet universe, that you can move it forward and by just saying, okay, well, this is a simulator. You know, this is what that might have occurred. You know, so that we can play around with it all we want, you know. Yeah, the X2 threat file. Love the idea. Actually, I love the idea. I really do. Like what happened with the Andromeda threat file, and that is to come up with all the crazy ideas that they saw for X2 and just have rules for them. Now, you know, not everything is going to hold true, but this is what could happen in the future. You know, the whole idea of a threat file for the other empires say, okay, you know, this is the technology they currently have. What will their technology possibly look like in 10 to 20 years? Yeah, exactly. David saying, well, can we finally overload phasers for real this time? Yeah, I think that'd be in the X2 threat file. I'd like that idea. You know, because come on, let's be realistic. Even people who are just think about it for our own technology today. For example, you know, the whole idea of AI. Right now, okay, breathe. AI currently. Too much is being associated with AI, which is not really AI. What it is just gears and clockwork. Hey, that's a good thing to do. P6A, we clear the proposals file cabinet again. I like that. Hey, I like that idea. But the whole idea of AI is going to take over the world. And one thing actually was pointed out by a technologist, one of the podcasts I listened to, is that obviously, you know, AI can actually, and I'm not saying AI, I'm talking about algorithmically speaking computers that can actually replace a lot of what can be done. Now, it's the whole fear of robots, what, 5-10 years ago? That we could, you know, we have robots that are going to replace all the manufacturing jobs. You know, and have they? No, they have not. And are they? Do they augment them? Yes, they do. And then it's not going to go down the whole rabbit hole of people and losing jobs and moving to a different job and all that kind of thing. So I'll stay out of that at the moment. Hey, David, got something to say?
Yeah, you brought something up, and I wanted to plug a couple things. Number one, you're going to avoid that pothole. I'm not. If you want to get a very good, concise analysis of the effects of automation on our soon near economy, go online, search for a video by Dr. Michio Kaku on automation. Those three words, Dr. Michio Kaku, automation. And he goes through and he'll tell you, these are what's going to be automated. These are the things that are not going to be automated. Here's where you can make money. it's a good video, and it's 3-4 minutes long. The other thing I wanted to plug, and I thought this was a very interesting idea, and I'm not sure, I'm... Again, the frustration of trying to write for Starfleet, and I don't. It's a minor point, but it really does answer a couple of things. Dan Brown's latest book, Origins, as part of the story, has what most people would call an AI, but it's not. And he's very careful about his terminology that he uses. And I've always been bothered by Star Trek and later on the idea of them having the taboo on eugenics, but then having artificial intelligence technology. Dan Brown offers a solution. It's not that we have artificial intelligence, it's that we have developed a tech level of synthetic intelligence. It can maybe go ahead and pass the Turing test or whatever, but it's not self-sentient, self-aware.
Right.
You know, it doesn't make that last hurdle.
Mm-hmm.
It is a synthetic intelligence. One that's so good that it can bluff most people into thinking that it's a person, but it is not true artificial intelligence. And I think that little distinction was one you were just getting ready to comment on, and it's also one I think that we might do well to adapt for our Starfleet universe, because it does make a very, very interesting distinction with things like computer-controlled ships, with some monsters, and particularly the Juggernaut.
Mm-hmm. That's true, because the Juggernaut is an automated system. Really. So it's my understanding they're basically automated fighting machines.
Well, and that's the question is, are they von Neumann machines? Or, as Steve has been writing, especially late, are they true AIs?
Okay, and if they were, well, okay, that becomes problematic. And this is why I say that, and that is, if they're truly an AI, in my mind, AI means sentient.
Sentient or sapient?
Sentient.
Okay.
As in, it knows about itself, it can learn, and it thinks of itself as almost like as an individual. You know? So it's hard to describe. And to me, that's a truly sentient AI is something that is basically the whole idea of Terminator, the whole Terminator thing. gets scary at that point. And that's a lot of people are scared when it comes to AI. And actually, that was one thing I was thinking about just the other day, where they're bringing up the term AI, because currently AI, in my mind, is currently just a marketing term. It's turned into a marketing term. And less about actual artificial intelligence. It's more of machine learning. And in my mind, what needs to happen is that we need to actually define these terms. And if you want to use AI, fine. Use AI and use it like we have automated driving systems. The whole idea of automated driving systems is you have different levels. Depending upon which level you go, you can have either can be assistive to fully autonomous.
And let's be fair about it, because the media's accuracy rate in describing technology is terrible. I mean, for the way
that they
describe artificial intelligence, synthetic intelligence, sentient, sapient, they've got about the same track record as describing an automatic weapon.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yeah, but at the very least, as technologists, as people who talk about technology on a daily basis, we, at the very least, should come up with terms that define what we actually mean and get away from the whole marketing aspect of it.
I'm sorry for interrupting you. Did you see last week's episode of The Orville?
Nope.
It's called Majority Rule. And everybody has a up-down badge that they have to wear. And depending on how you interact with people, you get rated. And if you get more than 1 million downvotes, you get arrested. They make the point that... Or they try, and it's a great episode. If you haven't seen it, go watch it. Honestly, Orville is outdoing Star Trek outdoing Star Trek at being Star Trek.
Understood.
Because they have this wonderful story about social justice, and that unfortunately is what you were just bemoaning is the same thing I do is the social intelligence. We think we know things because everybody uses that phrase, that term, that idea.
Right. Well, that's what I said. You know, this one comes to always the hardest point of anything when you're discussing anything with anybody is coming up with a common vocabulary with terms that you both understand what they mean. That is critical to have true understanding between two individuals is having a common vocabulary. And the reason why I was hemming and hawing about the AI when it comes to the juggernauts is that in my mind, if they are true intelligence, therefore they are a true race, a true empire. Well, let's call them a race. Because that's what they really would be, not an empire per se. They would be a race. That would mean that we can't kill all those ships because then we are basically committing genocide is what we're doing. That's when, I said, that's if you in my mind, if you've gone to that point of that it's an AI who's sentient, has a concept of feelings, compassion, love, hate, anger, the whole
more than self-awareness is sapience.
Right, spectrum.
So yeah, we're looking at sapience.
Right.
Now let us write our own little Star Trek morality story here. What if you have an AI that is a von Neumann machine, that its purpose, that its purpose is, as their race has evolved, to kill all of you. It has no sapient bearing towards compromise. It is very black and white clear. If you are not of us, you are to be destroyed.
Yeah.
Does that mean that that mean we still don't destroy them?
Well, it was completely a Vanu machine which has no concept of self.
Well, Von Neumann machines do. If you go through and look at the popular literature on them, I mean, go look at David Drake's Berserker series. Or Steve Jackson's Bolo, Ogre series.
True.
We've reached the point where the question is, how many angels can dance on the head of a pin, you know? And when it comes to trying to decide between synthetic intelligence and artificial intelligence, I think the answer to that is it all depends on who's calling the tune.
Right. Yeah, that's where is the line where we go from an automated system to something that's more sentient? To the point where it can be considered a separate intelligence that we have no right, in my mind, to kill. Obviously, if they're going to kill us, we're going to defend ourselves and kill it. But that's a different thing. Because there's always the whole concept of self-preservation.
After I managed to make it through my current trials and turmoils, and apparently Steve Cole's having his own trials and turmoils too, I would love to be able to have a weekend to go down and sit down with him for a couple of hours, because he's said that there is a moratorium on anyone else writing juggernaut stories.
Mm-hmm.
He's got some ideas.
Right, and that is fine with me.
Yeah, but I would really like to see him incorporate into the next story that internal conflict that the Federation has, mm-hmm, voiced in just the exact argument that you made as part of the story.
Yeah, agreed. I think that would be a fantastic angle to have. To have that discussion within the context of the story, because it's a tough one. You know, how far do we take this? You know, do we require every single being to be a carbon based or a natural based life form, or can
Mr. Larson,
or can be also or can it be artificially based, i.e., created?
Mr. Larson in the chat room makes the note. What about the Drex of Omega? Their inevitable invasion of the Ymatrians, judging them barbarians, and no peace to be made.
Understanding, the Drex basically are, for the most part, computers, is my understanding. They were created by who? Were they created by a certain empire to basically protect him?
Make sure, Paul, you flag this, talk shoe and bring it to Joan or Gene or Steve's attention. mm-hmm. because I think I really would like to take this can of warm oil and lubricate Steve's thinking on this one, because I think he could come up with some pretty interesting stories, and we may see some of the juggernaut return a little sooner than what we might have otherwise.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. You know, geez. Oy, okay. It's kind of thoughts that really makes my head hurt. So sort of, well, it's deep stuff. You know, how far do we take this? You know, how far does it go to the point where, you know, as I said, that we agree that something is what's considered quote unquote alive.
What Next Generation and Voyager both touched on that as well, but they did it in a very, I'm going to say sloppy, although that's not really the best description. They did it with very little repercussion about it. It was an in and out episode. Things ended the same way that they began. I think that there's more to it than that. I think that as Mr. Lawson says, you know, we need to look and see. Hey, we've got established things here, and if we're going to have a role playing game like we do with Prime Directive, well, I think that's also another thing to define. You know, the difference between synthetic intelligence versus artificial intelligence. And just because the Federation has a taboo against eugenics doesn't mean everyone else does. And maybe not the same also with artificial intelligence.
Mm-hmm. Oh, agreed. Oh, I totally agree with that. I can. It's almost like the whole idea of the Borg when it comes to Star Trek is that part of that is basically eugenics. In that they modify themselves they created themselves to be the Borg. You know, they weren't, to start off with, they were fully, you know, natural, and then they augmented themselves and decided that this was the way to improve the whole race overall, was to combine the two. You know,
it is an interesting thing when you start twisting some of that. One of the points that very few people catch, the casual Star Trek fans catch, is that Spock was you know, flying in the face of the Federation mores about eugenics, because as a fusion between human and Vulcan, I mean, just from the fact of their blood types, you have to know that there was eugenics work done there. His existence should have been. I keep trying to find it. I swear it's somewhere.
Yeah, I don't remember.
Fanfic or something that they note that he's the first Vulcan to ever attend the Academy, because before that, they all went to the Vulcan Science Academy.
Right.
But I can't find that source.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and Mr. Lawson says that he thinks he touched on that in Enterprise. I really wish Enterprise could have been all that the fourth season was, but then now we're going back into a very, very deep pothole. So, Paul, I'm going to go back to the rabble now with the chat room, and I'll turn your show back to you.
Okay. Thanks for calling in. Okay. Bye. Yeah, the whole thing. Well, in my mind, if as an empire, the people decide as an empire that part of their social contract is self-improvement, i.e. via eugenics, controlled improvement, you know, from, you know, by DNA and so forth of that, of that race. I think that is their decision overall. There's nothing we can say about it. You know, does it always have to be the whole idea of natural selection? No, you know, Lord knows. Okay, let's not go. That's the go down that rabbit hole about how sometimes we already are performing eugenics ourselves. But I'm not gonna go there. Okay, I'll let that slide. But you know, if as a society they decided to do that, I see no reason why what we can say about that as a different empire, as a different race. As a different society, because there's a totally alien society, but they live by a different set of rules. That's the way they live. We can't say that how they're doing it is right or wrong, because therefore we're basing our decisions on our own society and our own set of rules. And we can't say that both are the same. You know, and as a certain race, and society, I think overall in the world, I think one thing that I think is important, and I think everyone on this world should think is important, is that life is special. Life is fragile. Life itself is critical for the human race altogether. That's why I'm a very pro-life person. I believe in, you know, I don't agree with abortion. I understand that we need some laws passed to help in that category. So we can't outlaw it outright without some major changes in the law of the United States. I understand that, and I'm not going to go off on that. But also, I believe in natural death, i.e., the whole idea of of capital punishment. I disagree with it 100% because of part of what I believe is the natural death, and capital punishment to me it's not law, it's revenge. So it's not, you know. So that's how I feel about that. But anyhow, let's move. It's not a show about morality here, though. Obviously, it's turned into a certain degree of that just because of overall. We went down the whole path of AI, and when does it become? Where's the line? Where's the line? And the thing is, AW, just to kind of close our conversation when it comes to that one Star Trek episode that you mentioned that they left unresolved. And I think that was purposeful, because it's a very hard question to ask. Answer. It's a very hard question to answer because of there's so much gray area. As I said, where is the line? And that line is hard to define. Once you can define that line and know, okay, and feel good conscience that what you're doing is right, then and only then can you move forward. So until that time, in my mind, the difference between an actual sentient, you know, being and an AI, which is just, you know, completely von Neumann machine, with no real ability of knowledge, and that whole way of describing things, where but at that point considered kind of alive, you know, where is that line? You know, as long as it's a von Neumann machine, then okay, then in my case, then to me, then it's a machine. But there's a point where it no longer is a machine. It just it's an artificial construct, not artificial construct, but an artificially created being. You know, so. Anyhow, I think with that, we're going to wrap up for this evening. Went down that rabbit hole. And it's been a pretty long one. Was going to talk a little about Shapeways, but I think we can put that off until next week. We'll be happy to talk about the latest Shapeways minis, including the Drex, because I know I am, and I know multiple people are actually quite excited that we have some Drex ships in the Shapeways store. So, had a nice little discussion about, Lord knows, the whole concept of being sentient and what is right and what's wrong. When it comes to that, you know, when is it? When do we define something as sentient and as a living being, even if it's made out of, you know, electronic components? You know? And also, of course, we talked about Russ's monsters a little bit, and at least one monster ship. I was hoping to get some more in, but we chased that rabbit. And so, with that, I am Paul Franz, and I bid you a good night.